While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and to all our faithful listeners joining us across the region and around the globe. Welcome to Eagle FM, where conversations do count. I'm your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and you are now tuned into On the Radio News Analysis, your trusted weekday platform for informed discussions and deep analysis of the issues shaping Namibia's economic, social, political, and governance landscape. Today is Monday, the 11th of May, 2026, and as the country begins a new week of national activity and public debate, we once again turn our attention to the developments influencing policy, business, communities, and the everyday lives of Namibians. Now this afternoon on the Radar, we unpack the stories making headlines and driving public conversation, from economic performance and infrastructure investment to governance, service delivery, youth opportunities, education, business development, and the broader realities affecting households and communities across the country. Among today's key areas of focus are developments in Namibia's telecommunication and technology sector, following Paratus Namibia's latest financial results after the launch of its mobile network, ongoing discussions around economic growth and investment, and the wider implications for consumers, competition, jobs, and digital access in Namibia. And as always, we go beyond the headlines to ask the important questions on what is shaping the decisions being made today, how do these developments affect ordinary Namibians, and what they mean for the country's future and long-term development. Right here on the Radar, we believe informed citizens build stronger societies. That is why we do more than simply report events. We provide context, encourage critical thinking, and create space for meaningful national dialogue. Every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we bring you expert insight, informed analysis, and archived sound and your voice in the conversation. Because in a fast-moving and world-filled information, understanding remains essential. So wherever you are this afternoon, at work, on the road, at home, on campus, or just simply listening from the diaspora, thank you for choosing Eagle FM. Do stay informed, stay engaged, stay part of the conversation, because right here on the Radar, Namibia doesn't just listen, it comes to think. Now let's get right into today's news. Paratus Namibia Holdings have reported a strong top-line growth for the 6 months ended 31st December 2025, as the country's newly launched mobile business began contributing revenue and boosting subscriber numbers across its wider connectivity portfolio. The NSX-listed telecommunications, that is, maybe a stock exchange-listed telecommunications group, announced revenue of 381.3 million Namibian dollars, up 16.5% from 327.3 million Namibian dollars recorded during the same period in 2024. On a like-for-like basis, excluding investment income recognized in the prior period, operational revenue growth reached 23.4%. The company attributed the increase to customer growth across Namibia, expansion of its LTE mobile network launched in September 2025, wider distribution channels and increased brand visibility through marketing campaigns. Paratus said subscriber growth across fiber, SkyFi and mobile LTE services increased by 62.7% between July and December 2025, while LTE population coverage expanded to 67.6% nationwide. The mobile rollout appears to be accelerating uptake of the company's existing products since the mobile launch. SkyFi subscribers increased by 57%, while fiber customers grew by 49%, according to the group's interim results. However, despite stronger revenue, the company reported a loss after tax of $36.3 million compared to a profit of $26.4 million in the corresponding period a year earlier. Headline earnings per share and basic earnings per share both fell to a loss of 36.84 cents per share. Management linked the reverse up primarily to the heavy upfront cost of building Namibia's newest mobile network. Operating expenses increased significantly due to network rollout activities, while finance costs rose because of additional borrowing used to fund infrastructure deployment. Now, depreciation expenses also climbed as newly installed network assets came online. During the reporting period, Paratus invested $124.5 million in infrastructure, including $66.7 million directed specifically toward mobile network expansion and software systems. The broader mobile project has required substantial capital investment over several years. The company previously disclosed that it invested roughly $600 million into infrastructure and systems for the mobile launch, part of more than $1.4 billion spent on network development since 2018. The launch itself marked a major strategic shift in Namibia's telecommunication sector. In September 2025, Paratus officially entered the mobile market as Namibia's third mobile operator, launching LTE and 5G services to compete with the long-established state-backed operators. Now, while profitability weakened in the short term, the company indicated that the mobile business remains in its early wrap-up phase and is expected to contribute more meaningfully as the subscriber base grows and operational efficiencies improve. Now, the board said no interim dividend will be declared, citing continued investment requirements for the mobile expansion program. The results were published after a delayed reporting process earlier this year in March 2026. Paratus informed shareholders that implementation of new operational and billing support systems for the mobile business required additional reconciliation and validation work before the interim financial statement could be finalized. Let's take a listen to a short audio on that.
Climate action from global trade, environmental sustainability, and responsible value chains. And through the European Green Deal, the EU aims to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, while ensuring that consumption does not create harmful impacts elsewhere. The objective is simple. What we consume should not pollute, exploit, or cause harm anywhere else in the world. So that is what fundamentally the EUDR and CBAM are about. EUDR already entered into force in 2023 and is expected to apply from the end of 2026 for medium and large companies. CBAM has moved into its definitive implementation phase since 2026, with reporting obligations due as of 2027. Now, at the same time, the EU has listened to the concerns raised by our partners around the world. And as such, we remain committed to ensuring that the implementation is workable, practical, proportionable. And in this context, we have done a simplification review of the EUDR aimed at reducing administrative burdens and easing compliance requirements. And our experts will elaborate on that later today. For Namibia, these developments present challenges, that's clear, but also important opportunities. Namibian exporters, particularly in sectors such as meat, charcoal, mining, and in the emerging green industrial value chains, will need to prepare for the requirements related to traceability, carbon reporting, and sustainability standards. But this is mainly already being done in Namibia. So this means that Namibia is well positioned to benefit from these regulations, particularly through its renewable energy potential and through well-developed export sectors such as in the meat and the charcoal industry. I understand, for example, that most of Namibia's charcoal is already FSC certified, which is EUDR compliant. So this masterclass therefore provides an important.
Let's pause here shortly for a commercial break, but we'll be back with more news. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengelo wapubwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Watatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. And now, in statistics related news, the Namibia Statistics Agency indicated the Namibia recorded a trade deficit of 2.3 billion Namibian dollars in March 2026 after exports were valued at 13.2 billion Namibian dollars, while imports were reached 15.5 billion Namibian dollars during the month under review. According to the latest trade statistics, the country's export earnings increased significantly by 99.6% compared to February 2026 and by 30.7% when compared to March 2025. Imports also rose by 31.3% month on month and by 25.3% year on year. China emerged as Namibia's largest export destination, accounting for 32% of total exports, followed by South Africa at 23.4%. Zambia, Canada and Botswana were also among Namibia's top export markets during the reporting period. Now on the import side, South Africa remained Namibia's largest source of imports, contributing 34.5% of total imports, followed by China with 12.9%. Zambia, the United Arab Emirates and Oman also ranked among the country's leading import partners. Uranium remained Namibia's leading export commodity in March 2026. Contributing 26.7% of total exports. Non-monetary gold accounted for 16.1%, while fish, nickel ores and concentrates and diamonds were also among the country's top exported products. Petroleum oils were the largest imported commodity, accounting for 16.3% of total imports. Commercial motor vehicles followed with a share of 6.3%. Other major imports included nickel ores and concentrates, passenger motor vehicles and civil engineering and contractors' equipment. In terms of regional trade blocks, BRIC Plus countries represent Namibia's largest export market, contributing 33.1% of total exports. The Southern African Customs Union, or SACU, followed at 30%, while OECD countries accounted for 19.3%. Now, on the import side, SACU remained the largest source market for Namibia's imports at 35.6%. followed by BRICS Plus countries and OECD member states. Sea transport accounted for the largest share of Namibia's export at 54%, followed by road transport at 23.3% and air transport at 22.7%. Imports were mainly transported by road, which accounted for 57% of total imports. The report further indicates that Namibia remained a net importer in intra-Africa trade during March 2026, meaning the country imported more from African countries than it exported to them. However, Namibia recorded a trade surplus of 462 million Namibian dollars in food items, while beverages registered a trade deficit of 190 million Namibian dollars. Meanwhile, commercial motor vehicles were identified as the commodity of the month. Namibia imported commercial vehicles worth 979 million Namibian dollars, mainly from South Africa, India and China. The country also re-exported commercial vehicles valued at 48 million Namibian dollars, primarily destined for Zambia.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released the International Merchandise Trade Statistics Bulletin that is for the month of March 2026, whereby Namibia's trade figures show exports amounting to 13.2 billion, while imports were higher at 15.5 billion. resulting in a trade deficit of 2.3 billion. This development reflects an improved trade balance when compared to a 5.2 billion deficit recorded a month earlier, and further analysis shows a 2.3 billion deficit recorded in March 2025. The analysis of Namibia's top trading partners revealed that China emerged as the country's largest market for exports, while South Africa maintained its position as the country's main source.
We'll see you shortly after the commercial break. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo, iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM, otuna evi tota njuka, okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo, otukwetira o special ange, tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka, opone ushendife nawa, nukumona oijamo ili nawa, ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatu imwe mbali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Now for other news. Namibia's Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emmatio Finnis, delivered a cabinet briefing in Swakopmund outlining several government decisions and policy decisions discussed during the latest cabinet briefing. Key highlights during the briefing that she noted, one was on tourism and economic stimulation. One of the major cabinet decisions discussed involved outlined government support for tourism promotion and destination marketing initiatives. Cabinet reportedly approved funding measures channeled through the Namibia Tourism Board as part of the broader efforts to strengthen post-pandemic tourism recovery and stimulate economic activity in coastal regions and national tourism corridors. The context behind this is Namibia's ongoing push to diversify economic growth beyond mining and extractive industries by expanding tourism, digital services, logistics, and creative industries. Digital transformation and ICT expansion. The briefing also formed part of government's broader messaging around digital transformation, connectivity, and ICT sector expansion. Recent cabinet discussions under Teofilis have consistently focused on expanding broadband and telecom infrastructure, improving digital access, supporting fintech and e-commerce systems, strengthening cybersecurity frameworks, and positioning Namibia as a regional digital connectivity hub. Now, this comes amid major developments in Namibia's telecommunications sector, including the recently launched of Apparatus Namibia's mobile network, telecom cooperation agreements in Angola, and continued investment in sub-Saharan cable and broadband infrastructure. Pardon, just a correction, not on the recently launched of Paratus Namibia's mobile network, but rather the recently announced regarding the launch, following the launch of Paratus Namibia. Public safety and social cohesion. The briefing also followed recent cabinet concerns over rising violent crime and social instability. Earlier cabinet directives referenced by government communication platforms included intensified awareness campaigns against gender-based violence, murders linked to insurance scams and land disputes, and broader national building programs aimed at social cohesion. And this reflects growing government concerns over crime trends and social pressures linked to unemployment, inequality, and economic stress. That being said, let's now take a listen to Minister of ICT, that is Emma Teofilos, at the cabinet, as she addressed cabinet briefing.
Welcome to the 90 Ndaitwa. The first cabinet decision is an update on the green industry sector in Namibia. Cabinet took note of the current status of the green industry sector in Namibia, with particular focus on development of the industry. Key policy, institutional and investment priorities required to enable the sector to achieve its strategic objectives of industrialization, economic diversification, and job creation. Further to this, Cabinet approved the establishment of the Green Industries Council, comprising of the following membership structure. First, the Director General of the National Planning Commission as its chairperson, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, the Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, the Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, the Minister of International Relations and Trade, the Minister of Urban and Rural Development, and of course the Attorney General and the Governor of the Bank of Namibia. The second decision is the hosting of the 2026 International Society of Pharmacovigilance, ISOP Africa Chapter, annual general meeting to advance patient safety from the 18th to the 20th of May 2026 in Windhoek. Cabinet endorsed the hosting for Namibia to host this 2026 International Society of Pharmacovigilance, ISOP Africa Chapter, annual general meeting, scheduled, of course, from the 18th to the 20th of May 2026 in our capital. And additionally, Cabinet authorized the Ministry of Health and Social Services through the Namibia Medicines Regulatory Council to coordinate all the planning, implementation, and stakeholder engagements in collaboration with the ISOP Africa, the local organizing committee, and the scientific committee. The ISOP is a regional non-governmental organization dedicated to fostering and developing pharmacovigilance and patient safety across the African continent. The third decision is the MOU between the Government of the Republic of Namibia and the Government of the United Republic of Tanzania on cooperation in the field of correctional and prison services. Cabinet approved the signing of this Memorandum of Understanding between our Republic and that of the Government of the United Republic of Tanzania on cooperation in the field of correctional and prison services. In addition, Cabinet also authorized the Minister of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security to sign the MOU on behalf of the Government of the Republic of Namibia. The cooperation provides for the joint projects in correctional and prison services, exchange programs for training, educational tours, research and study projects, and hosting of sports and cultural activities. The next cabinet decision is a memorandum of understanding between the Republic of Namibia and the Republic of Angola on cooperation in the field of information and communication technologies. Cabinet approved the signing of this MOU between the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology of the Republic of Namibia and the Ministry of Telecommunications, Information Technologies and Social Communication of the Republic of Angola in order to collaborate in satellite communications in order to enhance network coverage in Namibia and close the existing network gaps. Furthermore, Cabinet authorized the Minister of Information and Communication Technology to sign the Memorandum of Understanding on behalf of the Republic of Namibia. The fifth Cabinet decision is the 2024-2025 Integrated Annual Report and Financial Statements of the Meat Corporation of Namibia, MITCO for short. Cabinet took note of these integrated annual reports and financial statements of MITCO and authorized the Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform to table the report in the National Assembly. The next Cabinet decision is the 2025 Annual Report and Financial Statements of the Bank of Namibia. Cabinet took note of these 2025 Annual Report and Financial Statements of the Bank of Namibia and authorized the Minister of Finance to table the report in the National Assembly. The next Cabinet decision is the 2025 Annual Report and Financial Statements of the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority. Cabinet took note of these annual reports and its financial statements of the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority and authorized the Minister of Finance to table these said reports in the National Assembly. The eighth Cabinet decision is the request to table the ratification of three International Labour Organization conventions on occupational safety and health in the National Assembly. Cabinet authorized the Minister of Justice and Labour Relations to table the following International Labour Organization ILO conventions in the National Assembly for ratification. First, the Convention on Occupational Safety and Health of 1981, being number 155. Second, the Convention on the Promotional Framework of Occupational Safety and Health of 2006, number 187. And third, the Convention on the Occupational Health Services of 1985, number 161. As such, Cabinet took note that the ratification of these three conventions will demonstrate Namibia's commitment to ensuring a safe and healthy working environment for all workers and to implement their provisions in law and in practice. The next Cabinet decision is the MOU between the Republic of Namibia and the Republic of South Africa in the field of employment and labor. Cabinet approved this MOU between Namibia and South Africa in the field of employment and labor cooperation to strengthen and consolidate bilateral relations between the two countries. Therefore, Cabinet authorized the Minister of Justice and Labor Relations to sign the MOU on behalf of the Republic of Namibia. The 10th Cabinet decision is the hosting of the African Real Estate Society, AFRES for short, 26th Annual Conference in 2027 to be held in Windhoek, Namibia. Cabinet approved the hosting of this very important conference of the African Real Estate Society's 26th Annual Meeting to be held in September 2027 in Windhoek, Namibia, for real estate professionals, academics, and other allied groups to deliberate on the changing dynamics of the real estate market, emerging implications, and the policy recommendations for governments, businesses, and households. Furthermore, Cabinet directed the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water, and Land Reform to prepare a comprehensive concept paper for this conference. The final decision for this Cabinet briefing is an update on the progress of the third round of the national polio vaccination campaign. Cabinet took note of the 47% vaccination coverage achieved during the first 2 days of round three, as well as the cessation of the door-to-door vaccination activities from the 30th of April 2026. As a result, Cabinet directed the Ministry of Health and Social Services to consider the reactivation of the door-to-door vaccination for certain areas when the need arises, in due consideration of the epidemiological risks associated with ceasing door-to-door initiatives. Moreover, Cabinet took note that in the event the vaccination coverage is below the 80% threshold, a round 4 may be required to protect all children and prevent cases of acute flaccid paralysis. Cabinet urged all leaders to support the partnership model by encouraging parents to voluntarily bring their children to designated public vaccination sites. Viewers, listeners, this brings us to the end of the Cabinet briefing of the 12th and 13th Cabinet decision-making meetings held on the 28th of April and the 6th of May 2026.
And with that being said, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll definitely be back with more news. Do stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, in other news, China fully implements a zero tariff policy for African exports, therefore opening opportunities for Namibia. Now, as China has officially implemented the zero tariff treatment on products from all 53 African countries with which it maintains diplomatic relations effective 1st of May 2026. Now, the move makes China the first major economy to unilaterally grant comprehensive tariff-free access to nearly the entire African continent. And the policy expansion follows a series of commitments announced by the Chinese President Xi Jinping under the framework of the Forum on Africa-China Cooperation, now or at the 2024 Beijing Summit of FOCAC, China pledged zero tariffs for all at least developed countries with diplomatic ties to Beijing, including 33 African states. Now, to interrogate this further, I'm joined by my colleague David Shombe. A very good afternoon to you, David Shombe, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Juju. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Shombe, brief us on what the Chinese government spoke about this morning regarding the zero tariff.
Yeah, regarding today's briefing, you'll be able to see that the implementation of zero tariffs, especially to 53 African countries, have started, operational. And just to give a context also to say where is Namibia standing, particularly its trade relationship with China.
Mm-hmm.
To an observer and also to researcher, you'll be able to see that China is the biggest economy in the world, and there's a competition in the world who should get African market, particularly looking at resources and also looking at how we can assist in terms of development. But you'll be able to see that China is very smart and is beating out the Western. It's a fact that cannot be contested. However, today just was looking at the statistics and also to look at how can Namibia access also the 1.4 billion market, because remember, when you are trading with China, it's like you are trading with the whole of Africa in terms of numbers.
Okay.
But the fundamental question and the center of the discussion today was on value addition and also how you can make Namibia great, because Juju, trading is one thing, helping the country to get out of problems is the other thing. Yeah, that's why the center of question was how can you help Namibia, apart from us selling beef to you, apart from us selling biltong, apart from us selling grapes to you, what can you do at home to make sure that Namibia is able to finalize its products here at home? That was
That's a good question.
It was the center of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see that, Ambassador Ndawa Iping, he said he's very open, and China is looking at the aspect of value addition too. Because if I have to look at it the other way, number is numbers, trade is trade, but human relation is human relation. That's why that is always a center of conversation today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there a tangible answer to say how they can actually practically help Namibia with value addition? Because when we're talking about value addition and China really coming in, they have the machinery, Shombe.
Yeah.
We won't shy away from that.
Yeah.
They have the machinery that we can use when we're talking about value addition. They have so many things that they have done for value addition. Let's even talk about toys. You know, Chinese have factories where they produce toys, you know, that they obviously send to different countries. If they could even imagine just a factory right here in the capital city whereby Namibian people go, and even young people, because they in China, from what I hear, is those children who are going to primary school that have even been taught how to actually assemble something. So what are there practical, tangible conversations that were put on the table to say, okay, we might be able to help you in this regard with value addition?
I think that is a very interesting question. You read my mind. Indeed, it was part of the conversation, especially when it comes to value addition. But to me, through my observation, I realized that I think it's what you put out there. China will not tell you that this is what you need to do. It's you. Because if you are happy with trading raw materials, because he even gave an example of saying, no, you guys, you are selling us a beef. But the beef that you are selling us is not fully processed, but we are also willing to attract the Chinese investor to come to Namibia, and also looking at that process of value addition. And to me, that Juju, that's the only way that we are going to solve these problems.
Sure.
Because I've asked a question, because you know my area is always uranium. I've asked a question to say, the direction of 2030 of Namibia is creating of employment. And stopping off a consumer economy is where Namibian politicians and African politicians speaking about it. I ask a question to say, if you are asked to assist Namibia to deal with a nuclear plant, what is your intention? What is your response? And the ambassador said sharing of technical experts is, and Namibia is free to use its natural resources. Maybe it's also something that you also need to look at yourself to say, is Namibia really willing from this side? Because you can't just trade with me and you say, no, David, why you have a nice suit and you're not giving me your nice suit?
Yeah.
It depends on who is asking to. Because I think it's also our willingness and what we entered into, especially when it comes to trade relations. But there's a lot of things, because in the world currently, we are in relation with a lot of countries, and the China trade relation looks bigger, look better compared to AGOA. That does not also mean that we should abandon AGOA
and neglect it.
But it is how it's how we play. But the only question that I think the listeners and also Namibians should ask themselves is that, how are you going to win? Knowing people is one thing. You can be a friend. You can have 20,000 friends.
Yeah, true.
Have you seen a person who said, I know everybody, but when you get into trouble, when you get into trouble, nobody can come and assist you?
Exactly.
It's what you get out of these trade relations.
Opportunity, preparation meets opportunity, something like that. Like, when opportunity comes your way, be prepared.
Yeah.
Now, opportunity has come our way. Are we prepared? I think that's a question also.
It's a very important question also to say, when our Namibian negotiators are in those boardrooms, do they think about a young child, a young graduate in Katutura who does not know where to go? Somebody who studied chemistry, for example. Or the only thing at that level? That is also a question we need to look into, say, yes, it's free trade, but what are we getting from that? Money can come into Namibia, but is it coming to everybody? Because exporting and trading, look, China, we are number one trading partner of China. The latest economic indicator that uranium is number one in terms of trade. It come back to number one now in terms of trade. But the only question is that, in that area of uranium, how many jobs were created? How many values were ended?
Yeah.
And that conversation.
True. Oh my God. I'm just gonna come and see a break. Open the door for me quickly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, Shombe, quite interesting news here. But let me tap into your wealth of wisdom. What is it that you think Namibians should put on the table now? Thankfully for President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah appointing the different appointees with the economist and to give some sort of advice the technical experts when it's necessary. I think this is the time where we really need them, especially those on economic aspect. I think this is the time where we. But let's step into your wealth of wisdom, Shombe. What is it that you think Namibia should do now? To leverage this opportunity, take advantage of this opportunity that China has given us.
Juju, I will continue saying what I've been saying, is that Namibia must do what they say. We have a very clear plan of NDP-6. Are we following that NDP-6? Mm. Or do we change when we get into those boardrooms? You don't need to say what we need. We know exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
We knew that 10 years ago. We knew that 15 years ago. And we are not doing it. The only thing that we must stop. I think drafting of plan, we drafted enough. NDP-6, if you implement NDP-6, just even 60%, you will see Namibia rising. If you say mineral beneficiation, if you say value addition, if you say stopping of exporting raw material unless we add value here, then you see factories being built. I don't have any new tactical new strategy.
Yeah.
Just to say, let's do what we say, what we promise Namibian people, and also Namibian people to understand that it's through utilization of natural resources. There's no one who become industrialized through selling of raw materials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Anyway, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Sure.
Okay.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete ofoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okwene ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Watatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now let's get into economic indicators before we head for news beyond the borders of Namibia. $1 today is equal to 16.43 Namibian dollars. That's 16 Namibian dollars point 43 cents. One Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars point 91 cents. €1 is equal to 19 Namibian dollars point 34 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 0.47 cents. And one Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. And now let's go for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off with the court's response to broadcast the senior official's case whereby the two senior police officers were granted 20,000 bail each.
Welcome back. Let's take you back to outside the Kempton Park Magistrate Court, where Atlinda Mate is currently briefing the media. Let's listen in.
A serious case of defeating, well, the ends of justice, but it does show that as an organization, we are committed to transparency, to integrity, and rooting out wrongdoing and corruption within our ranks. We've always maintained that no one is above the law, irrespective of your position, your status, and the rank that you hold. So I think this is really a demonstration that the SAPS is committed to rooting out wrongdoing within our ranks.
Yeah, thank you very much. As everybody must have heard in court, the accused are charged with two counts, which is basically a contravention of the Precious Metals Act, Section 4 of that, and the defeating the end of justice. And from our side as a prosecution, one thing that I need to make clear is you need to understand that when the police do the investigation, they have to come to us so that we see the evidence that they have and assess whether the evidence is enough for us to prosecute. And once we have made the decision to prosecute, which is the case in this case, then the people were arrested and brought before the court. And we are really comfortable that we have got a case and they've got a case to answer. And we hope that when the date of the 14th of July comes, we will give the necessary documents as per the court. And we are working very well with the police because the investigation is done by the police. We do the prosecution side, and we are comfortable that we will do that without fear, favor, or prejudice.
Atlinda Matepula, Chiti Jones from ENCA. Can you confirm if accused one, Tariq Downs, opened a case against the Gauteng Hawks, alleging that some of the precious stones were stolen?
Well, I don't have detail. I haven't been briefed on that particular issue, but I'm sure on the next appearance we'll have more information.
Has the witness come forward with information that can ultimately tie down the three and strengthening the case of the state?
Well, we did receive a tip-off, but I won't go much into detail. Like I've indicated, we are now at court, and those details will then be made public through court processes.
All right, thank you very much, Atlinda Mate, and of course, Mr.
Keza, well, what you've just heard, Mfundo,
according to a security strategist, he says it's a breath of fresh air to see senior officials being arrested, of course, for the crime they've committed.
Two senior police officers and a civilian allegedly linked to the illegal dealing and unlawful possession of precious metals who are expected to appear before the Kempton Park Magistrates Court today. They were arrested over the weekend following investigations into allegations of illicit precious metals transactions, corruption and related offences. And we join now by Ambassador Andy Mashaile, who is, of course, a security strategist and retired Interpol ambassador. Ambassador Mashaile, thanks so much for your time. Welcome to Morning Live.
Good morning, SK, and to the Team Majestic, your production team over there.
Well, thank you so much. Let's just get straight into it. With already fragile confidence in the South African police service, what does arrests like the ones we saw over the weekends, what do those do for public confidence in SAPS?
SK, these are wonderful news for members of the public. The flip side of the coin is it has the further ability to erode the little of the trust that was existing. The community or the people out there would want convictions from the prosecutions that have happened over the weekend. It is a breath of fresh air when you see senior officers being arrested. Obviously, they are innocent until proven guilty, but it now shows that South Africa is now ready to effect the rule of law and justice.
You say it is now ready, but what about things like vetting, internal vetting, things like lifestyle audits? Are we saying that the SAPS failed to do these properly in the past?
They failed to do that properly in the past. Sakina, vetting was used as a weapon against some of the police members. If you were a general, SK, who did not like wrongdoing and your clearance expires and you would apply for vetting, some of them have applied some 2-3 years ago and they haven't received their marching orders in terms of, yes, you have the okay to go into very important and secret meetings where you will pick up sensitive information, suggesting that those who were responsible for that process had ulterior motives. Let's see when the situation has been turned around and some of those individuals who are managing the vetting space are no longer there. In fact, we should be brave to say change people around. Those who were problems with regard to vetting, move them to go and watch car pounds there, go to the 13th store and do some of those things so that you can have that process with decency and giving respect to those who want to do their jobs.
But while all of this is unfolding, skepticism still abounds because people have now been exposed to the extent of the rot within the criminal justice system, especially the police, as we've heard at the Madlanga Commission. But are these arrests actually a sign of accountability, Andy, or is this just another phase of the internal struggles within the South African Police Service?
SK, South African police services have now woken up from the many years of slumber. 32 years of democracy that we were hoping that law enforcement agencies will do what they are expected to do. They will respect the code of conduct. They will understand their mandate. They will move away from dark and negative thoughts of committing crime whilst wearing the uniform. We were expecting them to come to our defense as the bulwark of society against crime and criminality and not for them to participate. Whilst on the flip side of the coin, it might be internal wars, what they call succession
battles. Patuchitana basic mental health first aid course. Haiganjua Oshari Chamhongi, Kwamboka Eri Iyo, your NHP. Watapewa Unongo Nonseo, Nakeneuna, Okutongorora, Omadiriko, Obetameko, Yenacha, Nupiaka, the Nenge, Omathidakano, Opama Viraviro, Kuchane, Omokatiko, Kum. mekoe nenge anironga pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo nkene una okuya kwathera nokuya pa eyabidhidho yili monjira omanga upyakadiboka inauru darara kuyerere owunji nankene una okala uishangitha talelapo epanja yao yo nhp.com.na epango nomaradurathano odo dhina okurandurwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
I said all of them want to become a national commissioner, and it is impossible. And those who are running on the ground, the boots on the ground, look upon those who are in the air-conditioned offices at National Office for guidance. When those who are supposed to provide guidance commit crime, it breaks the morale of those guys in those in the boots on the ground, those guys in the flying squad cars and your ordinary visible policing vehicles, as well as the vehicles of those who are detecting crime and investigating crime.
Ambassador Mashaila, what do you know in terms of the background of this story? Because as we understand, it dates back to 2021 with an arrest that took place at the OR Tambo International Airport. There's the civilian who tries to get through security with about 300 grams of gold in his Gucci sling bag. And he's arrested. Calls are made, the two generals arrive at different points, and somehow this case goes nowhere. So what is your understanding of what has happened here?
You know, Sakina, before the 6th of July, 2025, evil things were happening, like this story that we're talking about. And one of them is a friend of mine. We have worked together at National Head Office. I have known the gentleman to be a man of good standing. The other one I haven't worked with from crime intelligence. It tells you, Sakina, the story tells you that what we were hoping for in terms of the rule of law obtaining, there would be others who would have a different take on the matter. And I am not passing judgment for the fact that they are arrested. It means the investigations from that cold case of 4 or 5 years back has suggested and has led to them being fingered, being part and parcel of the organized crime syndicates or the criminal networks. Once again, they are innocent until proven guilty. They are suspects now. They have been charged, they have been charged. They are appearing in court today. They are now the accused. We can safely mention out their names because we want the system to be clean. This is not me. These are the people of South Africa saying we want our police officers to be clean. And if needs be, arrest, charge, prosecute, convict them so that you can get a better cohort of police men and women walking on the face of South African streets, wearing the uniform and flying the flag and the badge.
But of course, the broader question then becomes, to what extent does an arrest such as this or such as these, given that there were three, to what extent does this suggest that high-ranking police officials are actually providing top cover for illicit activity, for sophisticated illegal mining syndicates, as is suggested in this case through what was found in terms of the contraband, rather than just opportunistic theft?
Sakina, link the arrest of the two generals based on that stash of gold. Link it to the escape of Tiger, who ran away from Stilfontein mine after they were hoisted up from underground. Link it to that. Connected to that escape are police officers, even though at this case they are low level. So the nexus between the two cases suggests that we need clean-minded officers. We also have a responsibility to make sure that we talk to them in a way and manner that instills pride for the South African Constitution and the flag. What we have been seeing, I just saw a list of about 20 officers on X posted by Yusuf Abramji. Some of them generals, brigadiers, colonels, including Sergeant Faningos. I was shocked at looking at that number. Some of them are retired police officers. It tells you a story, Sakina. It's not a nice story, but we must turn that story around so that it should be a story of hope, convenience, resilience, and crushing of crime and combating crime as well as detecting crime. If needs be, get rid of all of them, those could be successfully prosecuted. Convict them so that other police officers should see that this is not a joke. South Africans mean business.
Meanwhile, South Africa's top court orders President Cyril Ramaphosa impeachment process review.
A very good morning. Court in the matter where Parliament in 2020 set up a panel, very important decision has been made that could shape the future of the president of this country. Here at the Constitutional Court in Johannesburg today, there was a judgment by the Constitutional Court in the matter where Parliament in 2020 set up a panel to investigate and come out with a recommendation if President Cyril Ramaphosa had any wrongdoing during a time when money was stolen from his farm and that was not reported to the police. It was a case that happened in 2020. And now, the Constitutional Court made a judgment today. The judgment says the Parliament, which voted against that report of the panel and setting it aside, that decision of the Parliament was wrong. The Parliament has now to reconsider that panel discussion, which found that President Cyril Ramaphosa had violated some parts of the Constitution by ignoring, by not first reporting that man which was in his possession in the farm, and also by obviously not also taking that matter openly. And now what has just happened is that the decision, it means that Parliament has now to take back that report which found that President Cyril Ramaphosa had erred or had violated the Constitution and consider it, send it to a panel and consider if there are any grounds to impeach President Cyril Ramaphosa. This is breaking news coming to you live from Johannesburg. Behind me here, what you see, which is disturbing my thinking, is the EFF. The EFF is the one that took this case to court, and President of the EFF, Malema, is on the podium to address his supporters after this groundbreaking development that's happening in South Africa. What it simply means is that it opens a path for Parliament to consider impeaching President Cyril Ramaphosa. I will take you right back there just to listen to President Malema of the EFF as he speaks, just to see how excited EFF is about this decision. But it's a decision that could see a change in terms of what is happening in this country, in terms of the future of President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, we're going to be taking you there just to hear the EFF president speaking in terms of where to from here, what the party is going to do, what is expected from Parliament. But this opens the door for President Cyril Ramaphosa to be impeached, depending on what the Parliament concludes or depending on what the Parliament does. For those that are joining us, we are coming to you live from the Constitutional Court of South Africa, where a judgment has been handed down here in terms of, most of you know it as the Palapala Report. This is a case where about $600,000 was stolen from President Cyril Ramaphosa's farm. He said at the time that it was money that was used by a client to buy buffaloes, but the man was kept in the farm in the sofas. That man was stolen, And when the news broke, Parliament set up a panel that investigated to find out if there was any wrongdoing on Ramaphosa's side. And that panel found that he violated some aspects of the constitution by not reporting that money, by not reporting the crime itself, and of course, above all, that he was generating an income as a president while that was not disclosed. So this is the judgment that has happened today, and this judgment means Parliament has to reconsider that. Now we'll take you to the podium as Malema starts addressing his crowd now. Let's go ahead.
Panza, Tikwa, Diaka, Tikwa, down with Ramaphosa, down, down with Ramaphosa, down, Panza. Thank you very much, Secretary General, DSG, Provincial Chair, Provincial Secretaries, and all leaders who are here, the ground forces of the EFF, you made it. You came here and said Palapala must be released. Today, Palapala is out, and the Constitutional Court has agreed with you that Ramaphosa must be subjected to impeachment in Parliament. But the panel report must be taken to impeachment process, that vote of the ANC was corrupt, it was unconstitutional, it is invalid, and therefore set aside, like we told them on that day. You cannot vote to protect crime. You cannot vote to protect corruption, because every vote must be accompanied by rationality. Can this vote meet the rationality test? What was supposed to happen is that after the panel brought a report, we should have sent the report straight to impeachment, so that all the prima facie evidence that they say exists can be canvassed in a transparent manner, where South Africans will get to see the truth through an impeachment process. So impeachment process is like Matanga Commission, it's like Ad Hoc Commission, where Cyril is going to be called and is going to be put on the seat there and is going to be asked, where did you get the dollars? How did you bring the dollars into South Africa? Why did you put them into the sofas? So I'm going to be in that committee, because we want to go and see the sofas where the man was there at Palapala, because Palapala is a crime scene. We have to visit the crime scene to see what happened in that particular farm where crime was committed. We told them that for as long as the EFF is alive, Palapala will never die. And they never believed us. So when you are impeached, comrades, it's not a motion of no confidence. Once we conclude that you have undermined your oath of office, you have committed crime, then we go to Parliament to impeach you. There is no impeach. We take away the salary. Because remember, president is paid for the rest of his life. So we remove you from the office, we take away the salary and all the benefits, including the blue lights. So let not talk on a layer in a Ramaphosa, go and take it.
The Africa France Summit kicks off on Monday.
France will co-host the Africa Forward Summit in Nairobi, and it begins today. The gathering will be chaired by Kenyan President William Ruto and French President Emmanuel Macron. And this summit will focus on innovation, green energy and economic partnerships between Africa and France. Our reporter Ditaba Tsoteti is there for us. Let's check in with him. Ditaba, good morning. So what can we expect today as the summit kicks off?
Good morning, Sakina. Yes, quite a very important summit here in Kenya, Nairobi. It's going to be chaired by France and Kenya. The largest conference to be hosted by Nairobi. This is where more than 1,500 business leaders have been invited to attend this summit. The summit will kickstart with leaders meeting, business leaders meeting to discuss how best they can collaborate in terms of growing the economy of France and African countries. We understand also that this morning the French President Emmanuel Macron will open this summit here in Nairobi. But Sakina, quite a number of issues to be discussed today by in this two-day summit by these leaders. One of them is peace and security on the continent. We know that Africa has been experiencing quite a number of conflicts and wars in recent years. We remember also France used to have a relations with the Sahel region. But now, because since the coup in Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, France has now left those countries. It's now trying to form new partnerships with other countries, because even here, more than 30 head of states here in Africa have been invited to be part of this summit, where they are going to discuss peace and security, as I've mentioned. And also on the list, Sakina, it's climate change. Climate change is a very important issue here on the continent. We know the continent has been struggling for quite some time now in terms of experiencing floods. So the Paris Agreement also, where African countries or Africans at low, I mean, countries that globally, they need to ensure that they deal with the climate change decisively, Sakina, because it's also a big issue. The summit will also focus on the job creation on the continent. Kenya is looking to enhance its energy sector. So they will use this summit to form a new partnership with France in terms of energy sector. They're also struggling, like South Africa, in terms of load shedding, power or energy. It's also a problem here in Kenya. So the UNSG will also be part of the summit. He will address this summit. Antonio Guterres, Macron will address this summit also. The Kenyan president, William Ruto, and also the CAF president, Dr. Petrus Motsepe, will be part of this summit, Sakina.
Well, very interesting names there, and looking forward to hearing the reports of what they had to say. That's our reporter, Ditaba Tsotetsi, out in Nairobi in Kenya.
Somalia raises alarm over rising piracy attacks.
Riyadh has confirmed a series of reported piracy incidents along the country's northeastern coastline. Officials told CGTN they are coordinating with international partners to help secure one of the world's most strategically important maritime routes and prevent further criminal activity at the sea. The latest incidents include the hijacking of a merchant vessel on April 26, just a day after Ado was seized. Earlier on April 21, the motor tanker Honor 25, carrying 18,000 barrels of oil, was also hijacked. That is according to the Maritime Security Center Indian Ocean, the tracking arm of the EU Naval Force. The agency has urged vessels operating near Somalia's coast, particularly between Mogadishu and Hafun, to maintain heightened vigilance. Analysts say the growing threat may be linked to the diversion of international naval attention towards escalating tensions in the Strait of Hormuz and attacks in the Red Sea.
I believe two factors are contributing to this matter. Number one is the reduction of international naval operations against the pirates in the Red Sea and Indian Ocean. Number two is the lack of Somali naval forces. I think also we cannot have stability in the region. So these are factors that contribute to growing fears of piracy in Somalia.
Roughly 20% of the global trade passes through the Gulf of Aden, with vessels transiting near Somali territorial waters on their way through the Red Sea. Security experts say protecting the route should remain a top priority for regional governments and international partners, especially as global shipping faces mounting disruptions. Analysts also calling on Somalia to accelerate efforts to modernize and strengthen its naval forces.
I believe Somali government has an agenda to tackle this piracy problem, and I think it can be achieved by building operational capabilities by storing its maritime sovereignty along its coastline. As far as I know, Somalia is now taking bold steps toward achieving that goal, thinking strategically with global support from countries like Turkey, China, and EU. Already, infrastructure development is going on.
Somalia and Turkey signed a defense and economic cooperation agreement in February 2024. The 10-year pact includes training and equipping Somali naval forces to help safeguard the country's coastline against maritime crimes, including illegal fishing and piracy. Last week, Somali Defense Ministry released images showing joint naval exercises involving Somali and Turkish forces. Many Somalis say they hope the partnership will help bring a lasting end to piracy and improve security along the country's coastline. Mohamed Fahiye, CGTN, Mogadishu, Somalia.
From locally assembled
tourists on Hunter's virus hit cruise ship isolating in hospital.
France's health minister has said that a French national has tested positive for Hunter virus following her evacuation from the cruise liner MV Hondius. Now, her condition is said to be deteriorating. Meanwhile, the US says one of the 17 Americans being repatriated from the cruise ship has shown mild symptoms, and another has tested positive for the Andes strain of the virus, which is the one which is transmissible between humans. British passengers who are on board the ship have arrived back in the UK. They'll be isolated at a hospital in Merseyside, and they arrived at Arrow Park Hospital last night after being flown to the UK from Tenerife. Now, the news comes as the head of the World Health Organization says that the US's decision not to follow WHO guidance to isolate passengers for 42 days may have risks. Well, our colleagues are on location. Our Spain correspondent Guy Hedgeco is live from us in Tenerife, and Vincent McAvinney is at Arrow Park for us as well. Guy, let's start with you. So just bring us up to date. Where are we with the passengers that have been moved off this cruise ship?
Well, yesterday, around 90 passengers were brought from the cruise ship here onto Tenerife and then swiftly taken to flights that repatriated them. Those were passengers representing 19 countries. There are just a few passengers left, just over 20 left to be repatriated today. There will be one flight heading to the Netherlands later today. And then the final flight taking passengers back home will go to Australia, probably this afternoon or this evening. After that, the Hondius ship will continue on its way with around 30 crew members who will still be on board to its final destination, which is Rotterdam in the Netherlands. And that will take just a few days. Here, the health ministry and the Spanish government has said that the whole operation has been very successful. They did use very strict security measures to make sure that there was no interaction between local people and the passengers coming off the boat, and also that the passengers spent as little time here on land in Tenerife as possible.
And interestingly, we're now hearing that a French passenger who was repatriated on a chartered flight from Tenerife is showing signs of hantavirus, and her condition is being described as deteriorating. Just different ways that different countries are removing their citizens from Tenerife.
Yes, that's right. And when the health minister, Monica Garcia, was talking about that yesterday, that specific case, she said, well, this is quite possible. And essentially, there's nothing that the Spanish authorities can do if people, after they have left Tenerife, they start to develop symptoms or even test positive. You know, when we've seen that a couple of cases now. The Spanish authorities simply say they've done all they can. When people leave Tenerife, they have to undergo the necessary quarantine and the observation necessary. But clearly there are concerns if people are showing symptoms or testing positive after leaving the boat.
Okay, Guy, for the time being, thank you so much. Right, let's cross over to Vincent McAvinney, who's at Arrow Park here in the UK, where the British nationals have now arrived. Vincent, talk us through their situation.
Yeah, that's right. They landed last night at Manchester Airport, and then in full PPE gear, they were bussed here to Arrow Park Hospital, which is outside Birkenhead on the Wirral, just sort of to the west of Liverpool, for anyone that doesn't know the UK. The 20 that are British, there is also a German citizen who's a UK resident and a Japanese passenger. They're all inside the hospital behind me now for a three-day observation period in which they're being tested and checked to see whether or not anyone has the virus. No one at the moment is showing any symptoms of it, but that will then lead to a 42-day quarantine period. Now, those who are able to return home will be able to do so. But if they, for instance, have other family that haven't been on the cruise at home, then they're going to have to stay here at this hospital in special accommodation, completely separate. It'll be away from the public. And there's, in fact, been fencing put up around it for safety and security. And during that quarantine period, both for those that get to go home and those that stay here, they'll be self-assessing. If they do develop the illness, they'll be taken to another site for treatment. But as it stands, no one here yet showing symptoms. But those tests over the next 3 days could reveal that this virus has spread, as we've seen with those who are returning to the US and, as you mentioned, to France as well.
OK, well, Vincent, as always, thanks so much for bringing us up to date. Vincent McAvinney there at the hospital, the Arrow Park Hospital, where the British nationals are. Guy also joining us from Tenerife. Thank you very much to both of you.
Dr. Stephen Kornfeld, he's on board the hantavirus.
African nations are alarmed by South Africa in anti-immigration violence.
Nigerian missionary Stanley Uba has spent more than a decade building a life in South Africa. But that sense of stability is beginning to fracture. As violence against African immigrants in South Africa rises, even those living here legally, of which there are many, say they are becoming increasingly cautious.
For someone like me, I have nothing to fear. But all I would say at this point in time is that as long as this spate of violence is on, I have to avoid gray areas, you understand. But I'm not scared of staying in South Africa. However, there is this fear of being attacked. It's there. I can't deny that.
That fear is not without cause. Since 2008, South Africa has experienced repeated waves of deadly anti-immigrant unrest. Violence, Stanley believes, has deeply damaged the country's image across the continent.
South Africa might not recover from the reputational damage of xenophobic attacks or Afrophobic attacks in many years to come. Because Africans are watching, young kids are watching, people are traumatized. Imagine young kids being chased out of schools just because they are not South Africans.
But for many South Africans, the issue is tied to economic survival. With unemployment above 30%, frustration over jobs, housing, and public services is increasingly being directed at undocumented immigration.
It does affect us as South Africans because I don't really have a problem with them amongst us. But they do affect us in terms of overpopulation. And then, coming from a far away place, you do settle for less. Yeah, and so in that way, we end up having no jobs as South Africans because they've taken all the jobs.
Research suggests immigrants often fill labor gaps and contribute to local trade and economic activity. But those arguments have done little to calm tensions on the ground.
What the government is supposed to do is to make sure that the law is tight and everyone who comes in the country comes legally, not illegal.
The tensions are now drawing regional concern. During a recent bilateral meeting, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa and Mozambican President Daniel Chapo agreed that the crisis requires cooperation beyond South Africa's borders.
President Chapo and myself discussed this matter, and we agreed that we should work together. It's not only one country that is affected, and all countries that have foreign nationals in South Africa are also affected as South Africa is affected. So we must all work together, join hands to find solutions to this problem.
In our relation, security and peace is very important. Any country in the world, we don't develop in the country without security and peace. That's why we are here to talk about our security, our peace, and the security and peace of our people.
With undocumented immigration estimates running into the millions, pressure on South Africa's government is intensifying. And in communities struggling with poverty, unemployment, and failing services, the line between economic frustration and targeted violence remains dangerously blurred. Julie Shara, CHTN, South Africa.
South Africa has, however, dismissed claims of xenophobia, describing recent incidents involving foreign nationals as isolated. It reaffirmed its commitment to engage diplomatically with African nations on immigration. The nation's Department of International Relations and Cooperation said the government had swiftly condemned confrontational acts following protests against African foreigners that escalated into violence in various cities. This response follows Ghana's call for the African Union to address the alleged xenophobic attacks during its media coordination summit in June.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Peniambiko Jonas.